I think it should start off with like that, maybe not that music you were playing at the beginning, like that nice jazz, the little like jazz coffee thing. Shop music.
It's raining on the outside.
Exactly. I think it should start with that, and then it should slowly fade into just us talking.
Especially with the Lewis one. It was like, check, 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 yeah. check. Yeah. Like, does this microphone work? Is this on? Yeah. Da, da, da. Like, it was.
Yeah. I like that.
It was kind of a cool, funny thing. And then we're like, welcome to Radio Flyer. And then I like started, and I was like, I really like that intro a lot. So I think.
So just keep the
yeah,
open chat.
Kind of. And it only needs to be like a few seconds. Right. A couple.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard Radio Flyer with nonstop service around the world. Heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and now YouTube. Your safety and comfort is important to us, so please direct your attention to your flight team, Freddie Rivera and Michelle Zuno.
We out here.
Is my microphone working?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Radio Flyer.
Welcome.
My name is Freddie Rivera. Mm-hmm. On the blue mic. We got Michelle Zuno. Everybody, yes. Give it up for Michelle Zuno.
Yay!
Remember a lot of great feedback when we talked about the Kobe baby.
Yes.
Episode 5, The Ultimate Wing Woman. You brought up at the very end, which I think honestly was probably the best story in the entire show.
Yeah.
The Kobe baby.
I made him watch Laker games when he was a baby. And this was him when
what did he say?
When he could talk, he's like, Mommy, my daddy's on TV. So excited. To this day, he remembers calling him daddy. Oh. And my dad used to say, I wish we would be watching that game from courtside instead of in this living room, right. But whatever, you know. Yeah, so I decided to bring the Kobe baby.
Literally brought the Kobe baby.
Live in person.
Which is your son.
Hey, where he at?
Give it up for Damon.
On the black mic.
When Iron Man sweater.
That was 3 different accents. I hope you know that. That was 3 different accents. You. I don't know what you did. I know what I did.
Do you know, by the way, that Damon is now no longer a baby?
He's not.
He's a young grown man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I turned 18 in December.
Michelle Zuno, let's talk about the Kobe baby story.
Okay.
Let's just go back to the beginning of why he's called the Kobe baby.
Yeah. Okay, so... I know I've shouted out my niece and her fiance, John, before. So my niece, Alexis, is in El Paso, Texas. When she was about 8 years old, she had a ruptured appendix. And at the time, my sister and her husband were stationed at 29 Palms because he was a Marine in the military. And my sister, you know, when you know your kids, you know your babies and how they react to stuff. She had a feeling that it was something serious, and they sent her home. And she said, I'm not going to take no for an answer. Drove her all the way to L.A. Children's Hospital, which is a phenomenal children's hospital. And they admitted her right away and found out her appendix ruptured for 3 days. Mm. Usually you die after your appendix ruptures for 1. So she's a survivor. She did great. But
how did they miss that, though, the first time around?
That's a whole other story in and of itself. I remember, and you probably remember, going to the doctor as a child, they always press on your stomach. And I always wondered why they did that.
Right.
But then when you think about it, because if they pressed on your appendix and it was going to rupture, you would jump in pain. Like you would, she had very high pain tolerance because she was just like, I don't feel good. My tummy hurts. She was kind of a quiet child anyway, so she didn't really complain about a whole lot. But Lorraine knew. She knew that there was something wrong with her.
The mom instincts kick in.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Takes her to Children's Hospital in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Figures out that there's a ruptured appendix.
Right.
And she's 3 days into this?
Yes. So they pretty much take her into emergency surgery. And as they're taking her in, or before they take her in, they tell my sister, you should just call all of the family to come say goodbye to her. She's probably not going to make it. And we were like, what? Because it happened so fast.
Yeah.
So we did. We had family come. It was terrifying. And they came out like, she's okay. She came out of surgery. But obviously, it was a long recovery process. So she had to be there for weeks. And it was a long time.
She was in the hospital for weeks?
Weeks.
Wow.
If you know anything about Alexis, I'll have to send you a picture so you can post it. She's tiny. She's still to this day. She's 26 years old and she's so tiny. Mm-hmm. So even when she was 8, she was probably like, 35 pounds. She was just so small. So to see her in the hospital bed, and I don't know if you're familiar with Ronald McDonald House. It's a place where the families can come and stay if they're from out of town, that people travel from all over
the world.
Even out of state. Yeah, exactly. It's a place for the families to stay, almost like a hotel.
Mm.
community kitchen, all that. The families get to know each other. So it just so happens that while we were staying there and Alexis was healing, Kobe Bryant was rumored to be coming there. And they said it was going to be a groundbreaking ceremony of a new wing that they were opening up.
At the hospital, at the
Ronald McDonald House. Okay. And that they were going to come have him meet the families, and that he was going to be on TV, and they were going to do this, you know, he funds this charity. And I was like, as soon as I heard his name, my eyes were bright. Right. I was hooked on basketball, I want to say, since the day Kobe Bryant started playing. And so I've been watching the games with my dad for years at this point. And when I heard, I was just like, I have to be here on that day.
Yeah.
Word spread around in my family. So I brought Jessica, my little sister, and her friend Danae, and Damon and Damon's dad, Fred. We all kind of ditched work, ditched school. We're there with my sister. We get to be in the room and in the kitchen and all that stuff. And we go to it's like a lobby, common room where people can gather different families and whatever. And we see just a bunch of people, and they have name tags and their suits on, and they just look important. I don't even know who any of these people are.
Yeah.
And obviously they're clearing the way, and they're making arrangements with families. And they say, they come up to my sister, and it's actually his agent. I can't remember his name right now. They walked around and they approached us and told my sister, hey, Kobe's personally asking if he can meet the families. Mm. And I just accidentally had a bag with a jersey, basketball, bobblehead,
accidentally,
lanyards, keychains,
just by sheer coincidence.
You know, I just carry them in my trunk.
You were there, and it just happened to be in your trunk.
I'm so upset.
She had a Sharpie pen and everything.
Yeah, Sharpie. I don't even know how they got there, but I had all of that memorabilia with me.
You're hilarious.
and when I just thought, wow, what a great guy, you know, doing this for charity. And he personally wanted to go and meet all the family members. Like, I want to meet everybody here. And he was very genuine. He shook everybody's hand and he said, I'm so sorry that this is happening to your family. I'll pray for you guys. I wish you the best. I'm glad to be here to do this. I'd love to spend time with you guys. And when we asked him, hey, can you sign our stuff? He says, I'll sign anything you have. Oh, sure, I'm going to be here for a while. And he was there for hours. It was usually people who get a glimpse of Kobe or
like a quick meet and greet where you got to go in and out.
Take a photo. You want to take a selfie with me really fast? And we got to actually spend time.
You know, it was special because you were there for literally hours with Kobe Bryant.
Yeah. And
he's such a big deal.
Yeah.
So you're taking everything in.
I was just starstruck. I thought I wasn't going to be able to form words. I was like, I can't believe that I'm here.
Is Kobe walking from family to family? How does he end up coming to your family?
Yeah, well, he's standing like in the middle of everybody because there's a few crowds around. And then he kind of walked from family to, like, they told all of us, like, who was there at the time to come up.
Yeah.
And like, oh, you stand right here. He's going to come here next. But he had people guiding him, like, kind of family to family. I remember I brought Damon with me. He was probably about 11, I don't, maybe even less, 9, 10 months old at the time.
Yeah, I remember that.
He remembers. He remembers everything. He had a Kobe or a Laker onesie on.
Just so happens, by the way, right?
Like, and it was the same cologne, too, that he was wearing that day.
Same cologne that he always wears.
It just radiates from
him. And obviously, I've been a Laker fan, so I didn't go buy the onesie. I had that onesie since he was born. When he turned around and saw Damon, who I was holding, Kobe had the brightest smile. And he walks up to me and he says, oh, he's so cute. He said, my daughter Natalia, who just turned 18, my daughter Natalia is the same age as him. And he said, oh, it's amazing, huh? Aren't kids amazing? Kind of making small talk about children. And Natalia is his first child. So he was, you could tell the pride in his eyes to, you know, to have had a new baby. And he was so ecstatic. And he says, can I hold him? And I'm like,
my mom damn near threw me at him, like a chest pass. Yeah. She chest passed me to COVID.
I started hyperventilating. I'm like, it was like the Lion King holding him up. And I just couldn't believe it. Like, he's actually asking me if he can hold my son. And sure,
yeah.
I put him in his hands. Obviously, he can palm him because his hands are so big. He's like really big as Damon's body. And as soon as he held him, I said, can I snap a picture? And he said, yeah, sure. And he's holding Damon. I thought he was going to be like, oh, how cute, and to give him back. No, he just started walking around holding him. And I'm like,
oh, that's cool.
Oh, my gosh. And his dad and I were like, this is freaking cool. Like, this is so cool. People started turning around, like, and they were just like, oh, how cute. They said, look at the little Kobe baby. And I heard somebody say that. And I said, yeah, that's the Kobe baby. Yep.
Yep, that's exactly.
That's him. That's him.
How did you feel? I mean, that's one heck of a moment that Kobe Bryant is carrying your son at 9 months, nine months, Damon, in his hands, and he starts walking around with Damon.
Yeah.
Casually.
No, like damn near, like, it almost seemed like he kidnapped me. Like, he just like, this is my son now. Like, I'm going to walk around with this kid. Yeah.
So Damon, with big eyes, looks up at Kobe and goes,
Dad?
Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
I wish that was my dad.
What? And the agent was talking to my sister, wanted to know the full story about, you know, how did you guys get here? What's going on with you guys? He's such a nice guy.
Yeah.
Don't worry. We're going to be back when he's playing basketball. You know, I'm going to come back to you guys, and you guys better draft him to the Lakers. And we're totally like, you know, we just felt really cool, like friendly. And the agent handed my sister his card and said, you guys call me when he turns 18. Literally handed his card over to my sister. I don't know idea what she did with it. But
you're talking about a business card?
Mm-hmm.
With his contacts on it.
Yeah, the agent. He handed it. He said, you guys call me when he's 18. You know, I would love to see him come play. And I'm like, what?
And and they lost it.
No, I don't know. I have to ask my sister if she still has it.
Okay, so the agent, after Kobe Bryant is holding young Damon in his hands and he starts walking around with Damon, Kobe Bryant's agent passes a business card with the contacts on it to your sister.
Yeah.
And says, when Damon turns 18... How freaking cool.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously he didn't know he was going to play basketball. I don't know if he was just doing it to be nice. But it was such a cool moment. There was a running joke for years after that I...
I know what she's going to say.
Since Damon can talk, every single time I would make him sit on my lap or whatever and watch basketball games. I didn't know if he was ever going to be interested in playing basketball.
Good mom.
And I'd say, there's your daddy, Kobe, all the time. It was a total running joke.
Yeah.
Damon was convinced that was his dad until he was 6 years old.
Were you convinced that really was your dad?
Bro, because like my dad sucks. So I was like, yo, my mom, like, they must be lying to me. This must be like my placeholder dad. Maybe my dad is Kobe Bryant.
My placeholder dad.
I'm like, this dude must be like so famous that he can't like, you know, maybe he had like a mistress. I don't know. I'm a child. I don't know.
Yeah.
And my mom, I mean, I'm not expecting my mom to, like, I don't understand jokes at this point. Like, at this point, I'm too small. So I was like, that's my dad.
When we would watch the Laker games, he would recognize him out of all the players and he'd go, Mommy, my daddy's
up. Yeah.
And his little hands would go up.
Would anybody else hear this?
Like, oh, yes.
And they'd be like, oh, my gosh.
People were so mad at me.
Because it's evil. You're evil for that.
It was a combination of that is the most awesome thing I've ever heard. And they start busting up. Or like, did you really tell him that was his dad?
Because that's so sad. Because imagine children are innocent. So I'm genuinely thinking this is my father.
Right. Right.
And then like later on, like knowing that that's not my dad. Like, how disappointing is that? Like, I'm just like.
But he knew who his daddy was. But I just think. When you think of a father figure, he also calls my dad, dad.
Damon, do you remember the time when you realized that that's not really my real dad?
I think like, it just clicked. Like nobody told me explicitly like Kobe is not your dad.
Yeah, you slide into the running joke.
Yeah, he was really mature.
Yeah, so like I realized like obviously it wasn't my father.
Yeah.
Because I never saw him after that. But
that is how the Kobe baby came about.
Yeah.
Is that literally Kobe Bryant held you in his arms and walked around with you at the Ronald McDonald House. If you just heard that story for the first time, that's why producer Ruben and I were thinking, why did we leave that story for the last segment on episode 5 of The Ultimate Wing Woman? But that's how the Kobe baby story came about. Here's the Kobe baby now, 18 years later or 17 years later.
Yeah.
You're a grown young man now, Damon. How tall are you?
Like 6'2" on a good day, maybe. But like I'd say 6'1", 6 feet.
You're striving to become an actor.
Yes. Well, like, I always thought that term was weird, like striving, like I want to be an actor when I'm older. Like, I like to think like I am an actor now. Like, a lot of the stuff I do, like the way people think of like successful actor is different. Like, if you're not like the Rock making like millions of dollars, you're not successful.
Right, because I was even thinking about when I was asking you the question, striving to be an actor, or, you know, you are an actor.
Yeah.
Why did you want to get into this? And how did you get into this?
So before my mom even put me into theater, I remember I mean, like, I was always a kid that loved attention, right? Like, I was, like, I'm always loud mouth. Mm-hmm. I'm in the middle. Like, in the, if I'm in a room, like, you know I'm there.
Well,
like,
hold on. D's an only child, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm an only child. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
that, you the and attention I both, seekers here.
I like, and like, I think an attention whore is good to a certain extent, especially, like, I mean, I love it. I love it. So,
especially if you're entertaining.
Especially if you're in it. Exactly. That's why I like it. Like, when I was younger, like, kindergarten around that time, mm-hmm. they had, like, little, like, plays, like, Christmas plays. I forgot even what song we played. Or like what song we practiced, but I remember like rehearsing the song with all the little kindergarten kids going to this huge auditorium. Like it was so surreal. Like I'm in the backstage, like, and like obviously I didn't have like a main role in any of this play or anything, but like just the fact being on stage, I remember that like excitement, like me getting nervous and being like, oh my God, like I'm gonna sing this song. But my family's there watching me. I loved watching my family watch me be happy and loud. Mm-hmm. Right. And like a little bit later, her friend Becky owned mm-hmm. A studio mm-hmm. or like her own like company. And how like did
I remember, since I can remember, so maybe around kindergarten time, he's always made like comments, I want to be on TV, I want to be on TV. Not that I want to be an actor, just wanted to be on TV. And I didn't know what he wanted to do or how he wanted to do it, but he was always interested in it. So as soon as Becky told me, this was about 2010, mm-hmm. I had a good conversation and she happened to say, I have an acting studio. And I'm like, you have an acting studio? What do you do? Like, what do you do there? But she said, I'm the owner and we do performances. Like, she trains people. They do costume design. She sets up a stage with complete full stage paint. So I would bring him to Riverside every week. He loved it. And we would sell tickets to friends and family, and they would go watch him perform. And he did a couple shows. And
what kind of shows would you do?
Like the couple plays I was in, it was The Wizard of Oz.
No kidding.
Like The Grinch Stole Christmas, like mm-hmm. all that.
And so what role would you play in The Wizard of Oz, for example?
The Wizard of Oz, man. So I was like the leader of the Munchkins, right?
Okay.
I was
that's so cute.
It was cute.
I was the leader of the Lollipop Guild too. I remember uh-huh. that.
Yeah.
I was that, and then I was one more thing, and I forgot. I completely forgot what it was, but a lot of it was extra work, mm-hmm. right? Like mm-hmm. that's mainly what I did.
Yeah.
And but it didn't click with me. Like at that time, I didn't really realize like you had to audition to be like the bigger roles. And the thing that made me want it even more, I remember being like in a background character, but me being like, I want to be that person, that mm-hmm. one that's reading all these lines, the one that everyone's looking at. I don't want to be in this background. Like, and I remember getting frustrated, but I didn't know how to like express it or explain like what I wanted to do. Like, I just remember like being mad, and then like obviously finding out like the hard way, like, oh, you have to audition. I remember I kept trying to pursue it, and like she kept stopping me, and that sounds bad, and I thought it was bad at the time, but I realized
why would she stop you though? What was she saying?
She started to explain to me like I want you to enjoy your childhood. She was scared I was gonna fall into like. Like those Disney kids.
The typical
child actor that grows up doing drugs and like
which
making
has
really
a terrible
bad.
Reputation. I yeah, mean, which, it's so it, consistent.
It's probably like 5% actually make it out without
any
committing
problem,
suicide
yeah.
or being on drugs or mm-hmm. being very, like mental health is a big thing for them because mm-hmm. they're treated really badly in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And I knew that already. I want him to do the acting, but I want him to do sports and I want him to do school and I want him to do stuff after class. I want him to do every club that he wants to volunteer for. I wanted him to be super well-rounded and call me picky, but he was my only baby. I wanted to mold him into an overall really, really well person.
When was your first real audition?
First real audition? I think it was, I think when I was like 16 or 15 years old, that iPop thing.
Oh yeah, let's go back to that.
Yeah, so like when I started...
Because you're in high school right now, right?
Yeah.
So at the time, you're 15, 16, you're in high school, and this is the time you do your first audition.
She found this on Facebook or something. Like
I found like hey, we're doing open auditions.
Yeah, like an advertisement.
Like near the Ontario Convention Center. It was a...
So it's near home.
Yeah, exactly. Like, hey, we're going to do this big thing, and I have no idea. So I sign him up, and I'm like, hey, we're going to go to this on Saturday. He's like, cool.
So what was the audition for?
Well, we didn't even know at the time. Yeah. It was just like, we want to try to find actors. It was kind of the advertisement.
Okay, so it's just a very general.
Yeah, and so I'm like, okay. So we go, and I'm going to go with him. And I don't remember if they gave us the lines ahead of time. I think they
gave us the lines ahead of time because it was like you had to sign up for it and then they emailed you the lines. And I remember it was a Kit Kat commercial, like not an actual commercial for Kit Kat, but the script.
How many people are in the room?
Well, it was like the lobby. Mm-hmm. It was the lobby before you get to the actual room. It was kind of
audition a couple times.
Yeah, you had to audition a couple. So the first initial audition was like, okay, now you're good enough to make it into this room. Now we'll explain everything. And they straight turned away people like right at the
lobby.
You
know how they do, what's the show? the music shows.
American Idol.
American Idol and stuff.
Right.
It was like that, and it was all out in the open, and everybody's watching you.
Yeah.
Did you feel prepared?
I did not. I don't think anybody can.
I think he was nervous, but I think he just... I just said, tune everybody out.
Well, hold on. I would be nervous because
in front of you.
I can imagine what that's like in a lobby when everybody's trying to do the same thing, or everybody's, you know, of talent or trying to be, and everybody's watching you audition, and this is like your first audition, and then, you know, these are your peers, you know, that are judging you and your acting abilities. And
there was a couple people watching.
Anything could affect you. And this could affect your outcome of the next,
And it's really scary because, like, a lot of kids, like, they don't get into it because they hear their first no and then, like, kills their spirit.
So you do your first audition in the lobby. Everything goes good there.
Well, they talk about it amongst each other.
We hear, like, Damon, and I'm, like, looking at my mom. I'm like,
okay, so now what? And they're like, okay, get your stuff and go wait in this room. And it was a smaller room, like kind of like a studio.
Right, yeah.
And then they wanted to talk to the families individually.
So how did the overall audition in Las Vegas go? So what came about from that?
My grandpa, we get there and, like, obviously, like, they make sure, like, I memorize. Like, my family, before I even went to Vegas, were like, do you have all this memorized? Like, do it in front of me, like, right now. Like, do you have this memorized? And so, like, I worked on that with them. And then we get to Vegas, and then it's like, me and my grandpa find the hotel to go to. It's like... Oh, I forgot what hotel it was. But I remember the actual iPop thing was at the M. Is it called the M?
The MGM?
MGM.
The M, which is south.
Yeah, a little south of it,
It's nice. It's a nice hotel.
It's a really nice hotel, yeah.
It's like purple, right? Or like blue. Grayish blue or something.
It's like blue and black. Yeah. But we stood at a hotel like right at the edge of Las Vegas, and then the M was like, you know, a little south of it.
Yeah.
And so, like, we found our rooms, and then we're like, all right, we just get ready for the next day. Like, that's so like in the right straight up in the morning, like immediately like 6 a.m. Like we go.
Oh, you got to wake up early.
Oh, yeah.
Super early. All day, and like we'd get home at like 8 a.m. or 8 p.m. Like,
and you're just use it. 16 years old.
I'm like 16 years old at this
in
time.
Las Vegas.
Yeah,
and you're basically at this like audition camp for 5 days with these huge scouts or agents, and you do your performance, and 5 days are up. You're back at home. Mm-hmm. What happens?
So, like, right before we leave, it was like a list of like they gave you like a list of all the agents that wanted to talk to you.
Nice.
So it was like the last day. So they gave you a list of all the agents I want to talk to. I had like the 30 agents there. I got like 11 callbacks from them. So
that's
like
good,
they're
right?
Like, they're like, yeah, that's good. So it was like this agent, and it gave you the names, and so like it was like a room. It was almost like a science fair. Like you'd walk in, and the agents had like tables set up for each one. And
I
you
get
had to
it.
Go find the agents that you're that called I you back. Like, oh, what's your name? Like blah blah blah. Do you have headshots? Like blah blah. I gave my headshot. We had all that prepared.
Yeah, you had to have all that before you go.
My
headshots done.
My mom's friend AJ, my mom's friend AJ came in clutch with a headshot.
Now, when you're walking around from table to table, do you get to pick your agent, the one you want to work with, or do they pick you?
Oh yeah, you get to like they pick you, and then you pick out of the ones who pick.
Yeah,
you
gotcha, you get to see who you feel comfortable with talking to and kind of
exactly. Mm-hmm. But then, like, nothing came too much of the agent. A lot of experience came, like doing.
Yeah, he
like doing
he
the
wasn't
audition.
Really, like,
he wasn't active. He only focused on like the people who were like
already
doing good.
But
stuff.
But isn't that like the case with most agents?
It's true. But the way we take to people are people that we feel really comfortable with.
Yeah,
he seems so business transaction oriented.
Yeah,
like,
he seems
like,
so trained.
It almost seems like you're a number on their roll call.
You want to connect with somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, within like the year and a half that I was with him, I probably got 2 auditions.
So at some point, then you have this agent, and you're like, okay, you're not paying attention to me. Like, what's going on? Time is passing by. I want to get things rolling.
Yeah.
And so
how do you get to the next agent?
The next agent.
How do you find the next agent?
We started talking about how he should do a little bit more training.
Yeah, yeah. What can I do to improve my skill? Because I'm getting rusty here. I need to find acting classes or something. Me and my mom were like looking up on Google all these acting classes trying to find it. And one of my best...
I feel like it's got to be a hard thing, though, because as a mom, Michelle, you don't... Because you're not an actor, right?
Right.
And so you're new to this industry, so you're trying to figure out what's legit, what's not a waste of time.
And it's hard to do that research, especially because the good acting schools are in L.A.
All in L.A. and all very expensive.
His whole life I wanted to support him. I'm going to do what I have to do, do what I have to do. So his friend.
My friend, one of my best friends, Christian Hunter. I met him through track. He was like, oh, I used to go to this acting, like, I didn't know he even was into acting.
And it comes
loud.
Up like in a natural conversation.
It comes up in a natural conversation because I think he asked me like what I want to do when I get older. And he's like, oh, I used to go to this acting studio in Ontario. And I was like, Ontario, like that's close. That's really close by. Like, what's it called? And it was called like In the Moment Acting Studio. And so me and my mom like did a little bit more research on it. And we're like, oh, yo, like this, like, well, we can go there to check it out. Mm-hmm. And so we went there and we meet this dude when we walked in, full suit, a little hat named Tommy.
Mm-hmm. Does he look like the dude from The Blacklist?
Kind of. Actually, he does look like him from The Blacklist. A little bit. So he kind of like ran down like how much the classes were going to be. It was really
cheap. Reasonable. I mean,
super reasonable.
Crazy reasonable.
Because you guys have been looking in LA.
Yeah.
And now you're looking at Ontario.
We paid good amount of money for those classes in LA.
So now you're in Ontario, which happens to be a lot cheaper, and it's like 5 minutes away.
It's close by, yeah.
And so like I stood with him. I stood with him for a while. I've been with him for almost like a year and a half, like 2 years by now. Just hearing that initially, that he made a studio in Ontario to help actors that aren't in LA, like just that alone, you could tell he cares. Like one of the books that my manager taught me, books that he recommended me, was this book by this acting coach named Larry Moss. And Larry Moss trained a lot of actors, like just to name one, Leonardo DiCaprio.
Wow.
He's a really famous teacher. Like a lot of people would love, like kill to be in a room with him.
Yeah.
So he wrote a book called The Intent to Live. But just reading that little part, like the analogy he makes between, he even says that, like, the reason why I named this book The Intent to Live, because when you play a character, you're not playing the character. Like, you're not, like, you are the character. Like, sometimes you could like bring aspects of your own life.
Well, that leads me to my next question. For somebody who's not into acting, but I'm thinking about, you know, the mental state that these actors have to put yourselves into. Mm-hmm. If you're into a character that, you know, involves a lot of placing yourself out of your own mindset and into this character's mindset, and you've been doing this character for such a long time during filming, do actors ever get, I don't want to say stuck, but does that personality ever linger in who they are after the filming is done?
Well, I think it's not a complete disconnect from you and the character that you play. It's
addition, maybe?
Yeah, it's an addition. It's like, because a lot of the times when I think of a character, sometimes I haven't been through the experience of doing drugs or like being overdosed or like being like super angry.
Somebody
like that.
Completely on the other side of the spectrum.
Exactly. So it's like now you have to imagine yourself, if you were like that, you could do research, like trying to understand it better so you can play it better.
I feel like actors, you know, they get maybe sometimes too much credit, but I feel like they don't get enough credit because you have to put yourself in, if it's a dramatic role, a mental state which requires not just a physical movement of acting, but an emotional mental state, which takes a toll.
It does. I mean, like in the case of Heath Ledger with the Joker, it killed him. Like, basically. Even somebody like Joaquin Phoenix, when he played the Joker, like that took a toll on him, having to like, because it was not only a physical toll, like him losing like what, like 60 pounds.
But why is it the rumor that anybody who plays the Joker always has a mental breakdown?
Oh, I think
it's the character.
It's the mindset they have to get themselves in, and they do this movie. They film it over a year or two.
Yeah.
So they're literally having to eat, sleep, and dream and think like that person. And when you make yourself really mentally in a really mentally bad place, it's kind of like hanging out with somebody that's taking a toll on your mental health.
So you're with this, you're with a teacher now, you guys connected on a special level. He seems more real. And you've got your headshots done. You're getting your acting classes in. And you're also getting auditions as well?
I had one literally 4 days ago.
Okay.
Like on Monday or 3 days ago,
Walk me, who's not an actor, walk me through what a real audition is like.
So for me, like I'd get called, right? You'd be like, hey, Damon, like we have an audition for you. Like I'm going to email you the sides. And what sides are is like kind of like the script. The biggest part about the script isn't the words. It's the description, like synopsis of the character. Right. Like that's huge. And like in that book, The Intent to Live, one of the big things he said is like given circumstances. That's what he calls that section. Was the character, did the character have a cold the day before?
Right.
Did his mom die yesterday? Right. Just like a bunch of things that you think about, like the different like personality types. That
well,
this
that's
character
super
has.
Important to know. Mm-hmm. You know where the character is at in his life, in her life. Yeah. You know. Where they are mentally, where they were yesterday, you know, what motivation are they working off of, you know?
And not only that,
in their shoes.
But paying attention to the dialogue between him and the other character, like determining the relationship between the two characters. So not only are you worried about his own personality, but the way his personality would interact with this other person's personality. Then you have to think about the way they would respond to you and the way you would like it. There's so much things
so
that go into
it. So you're doing your homework, you're studying the character and the synopsis. Mm-hmm. and it comes down to the time or the day where you got to actually physically drive over and go to the audition. Yeah. What is that like?
So you'd go to a certain location, right? Like a one of the times I went
usually
to,
in LA.
Yeah, usually in LA. I went to Sony Studios in the Culver City.
Right.
Like, and they had like this little sub room that you went there, and then you would walk in. And they would just kind of like, no, you're on the audition, right? Like sometimes they'd have a little sign in sheet, and then so like they would come in and be like, oh, like. You'll just call the names.
I have a stupid question. And you're waiting out with everyone.
Yeah, when you're waiting out with everyone, dumb question, but like when you're all auditioning for the same role, does everybody look like you?
Kind of, yeah.
Sometimes, like if they're looking for a certain look, like I see like,
Is that a weird feeling?
You see like 15 guys that all look exactly the same, same height, same build.
It's like 15 mixed black kids. It's funny. It's the funniest
it's
thing.
It's so true.
Does that make everything more intimidating?
Not necessarily. I think what makes it more intimidating because you don't know what each person can do.
Because I feel like actors, especially, you know, even people in the entertainment industry, those who do have, you know, a sentimental egos, you know, and
you have to be thick skinned.
Yeah, you have to get ready.
Rejection well.
Exactly.
I want to give a shout out to your mom because the amount of support and the work that you have to put into make sure that you're not wasting time and you're doing the right thing. So let's give it up for Michelle Zuno.
Yeah, my mom. I don't know what I'd do without my mom.
But I like I told you, the way I was raised. My parents, my mother, my father, and my stepmother, all of them have never made me do what they wanted me to do. They never did. I mean, in a way, some of your parents do. They want you to be better than them, or they want you to kind of go this way, but they always let me make my decisions, always wanted me to go for my dream, my career. They never, ever tried to steer me away from that. And I know you said you could relate because your parents are the same way, encouraging. Your dad helped you build your studio. And I've always had that. And I always told myself that I would never pick what I wanted him to do. So everything from his classes to like, okay, Pop, if you think you can handle it, okay, if you want to do that, you want to work there, go ahead and apply to work there. Sure, I'll drive you here. Sure, let's do this. I want, his dreams are not my dreams. Mm-hmm. His dreams are his dreams. If he loves it, I love it. I mean, we may never see eye to eye on the same stuff. I mean, I'm not really, I used to want to be an actor when I was young and it was like a stage and then I was over it. So he wanted to be an actor when he was young and never got over it. So obviously it's what he's supposed to do.
It's not just a stage, it's my stage.
Yeah, it's what he's supposed to do.
I think this is the age where you start to discover yourself a little bit more. And I think, and it sucks because there's so many things you want / need to do, but you don't know where to start. And like, you end up getting stuck. Like even now I've fallen into it. Like I want to do all these things, but it's hard to bring myself to do it. Like that lack of motivation every day is just so hard to get past. Like,
especially during the pandemic.
Especially during the pandemic. Because like obviously one of the biggest deterrents is learning in school.
Yeah.
Like instead of doing in school, now it's online. Like obviously I want to get through that book, like the Intent to Live.
Yeah.
I have all the time. I just don't.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I can't find that like the reason why. So I end up playing video games or being on my phone.
But what a feeling though it is to accomplish, you know, something that you were trying to do,
mm-hmm.
and then when you get it done, you're like, okay, why did I take so long to do?
Yeah,
this?
But it, mm-hmm. but you feel I hate that feeling of being stuck. Like, oh, it's such an annoying feeling because it's just like I could read this book. Why am I not doing it? Mm-hmm. I could be practicing piano right now. Mm-hmm. I love to do it. Why didn't I do it? More recently, I wanted to teach myself how to speak Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing like little lessons on my phone and stuff too, but like not fully. I even bought a book, but I'm not fully indulging myself. And it's just like, I have all this time. Like this morning I went with a family friend to go walking with them because I want to get out the house and I know they want to get out the house too. And it's good to go. And like, even when I woke up this morning, I was like, man, I just want to cancel on them and go to sleep. But I was like, right before I was about to text them, I was like, man, like, nah.
Yeah.
Like, I have to, I want to change
and
something.
Did you feel good that you went?
I felt great. Mm-hmm. When the moment I got up and I got dressed and I was on my way to their house, I was like, I feel like, this is it. Like, I'm glad I was able to get up and do this. Like,
well, get used to it, Damon, because I mean, this is just the beginning. So when you have a role or a show and you got to promote and you're on the promotion tour, it's going to be like five of these a day.
Yeah.
And you're going to just roll your eyes at the same questions that are being asked to you
over and over.
Yeah. But you're going to have to be great consistently at every interview. All right. So for anybody who's listening right now, who wants to be an actor, you know, who's been thinking about it for a long time, your advice, Damon, on just take it from here.
Consistency. Love what you do and be consistent with it. Always train yourself. Like, always learn. Look for classes to do. Always find ways to improve your skill if you really want to do it. And not only that, but when you finally get into it, don't stop.
Where does one begin? Even like, because that's the hard question. Even for somebody like me who doesn't know, where do you even, what's step one?
I don't even know.
Do like research. Ask a lot of questions.
Ask a lot of questions, yeah.
Talking to people. Always bring somebody with you, like a parent or, you know, somebody that you trust that's going to ask questions that maybe you not think of, or start writing stuff down. That's what we kind of had to do.
Yeah.
Referrals and recommendations are big. Like his friend that was like, oh, I went there and I loved it. Mm-hmm. When if he said, I went there, it's all right, we might not have checked it out.
I think you're super talented, and I think that you're extremely witty, you're smart, and smell like Hollywood.
I mean, I hope
his
that's
car
a good thing.
Smells like Hollywood.
So when you do win your first statue, whatever that may be, don't forget my name, Damon. Don't forget my name.
He would never.
I'll be back here multiple times.
Like, yes.
It's not going to be the last time you see me.
Or maybe doing update interviews. I know you're tired of this, Damon.
I know you're tired of this, again. Damon.
Yes, your IMDb is going to be like 18 pages long. It's going to be like a scroll. So let's give it up for Damon.
Yeah.
Good to have you back again. Things are lifting up, so I'm sure we'll have more updates the next time you're here.
Yeah.
That is the story of the Kobe baby.
Yep.
18 years later, this is Radio Flyer. My name is Freddie Rivera. Michelle Zuno is on the blue mic. Once again, a shout out to Damon for being here at 18 years old. Yep. And by the way, I'm giving you congratulations already for graduating. And see you in Cancun.
See you in Cancun.
What was that Kermit ass? Like...
Hello, it's Kermit the Frog here.
That was incredibly accurate.
That was so accurate.
That was scarily accurate. You've done that before.
All right. Until next time.
Yeah, until next time. In the meantime.
In between time.
In the meantime, you're going to end it by hearing my amazing voice.
Stay safe. And wear your mask.
Don't be a savage. Don't be one of those people who yells at the workers for asking to put on the mask. You're going to an establishment knowing that. They have the right to refuse anybody. Remember that.
You're not, Damon will take it personally.
You're not better than anybody. I'm sorry, Karen. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Karen.
I don't know what to tell you.